The Baltimore nonprofit, THREAD, takes an intense approach to helping kids who are profoundly at risk of dropping out of high school. Its volunteers intervene during freshman year and do whatever it takes to get students to graduate. The ratio of volunteers to students is sometimes 8-to-1. Today, the program serves more than 200 boys and girls at 3 city schools, and the results are impressive. 100% of THREAD students have graduated, and 96% have been accepted to college. In our second hour, THREAD's co-founder and CEO, Sarah Heminger, talks about fighting what she calls the poverty of isolation. And the program's next goal, expanding and raising Baltimore's high school graduation rate by 5%. That's midday next after the news. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. Our second hour now. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. The Baltimore nonprofit THREAD takes an intense approach to helping at-risk high school students graduate from high school. Each student in the program is matched to a team of up to 8 mentors, volunteers, supporters. These mentors and volunteers follow their student for nearly a decade, doing everything from packing lunches and providing transportation to matching students to summer internships, or even in some cases, helping their families avoid eviction. Give you an idea of the problem here. A lot of folks in Baltimore are aware of this. The Maryland Department of Education reported that the state's high school graduation rate last year was about 85%, and the dropout rate fell below 10%. That's statewide. But in Baltimore, the graduation rate is only about 69%, and the dropout rate is 12%. Furthermore, chronic absenteeism is still a problem in the city, in the schools in the city. In 2013, nearly 1 in 4 of Baltimore's students missed 20 or more days of school. Today, we're going to hear the story of THREAD. This is our nonprofit profile here on Midday. Sarah Heminger is CEO, the co-founder of THREAD, and we're going to talk to her about how all this works. We've been hearing great things about this program, and folks have been saying, get Sarah on the show to tell you this story. Sarah Heminger, nice to have you on the show with us.
Thank you for having me.
This program started off with a different name about 11 years ago called the Incentive Mentoring Program, right? And then it turned into THREAD, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I thought it would be good just to go back to the beginning, since you've never been on our show before, and a lot of our listeners may not have heard about your program, to how it started. You came to Baltimore to go to Hopkins, right?
Yes. So THREAD really started even a little bit before that. The idea started when I was actually a freshman in high school. So I grew up in Indiana. And during my very first day of school, I met a gentleman who at the time was straight A student, varsity athlete, getting ready to go on to college at the Naval Academy. And you know, we quickly became friends, and over a few months, as we were friends, I would hear different rumors about him. So people would say things like, his mom's a drug addict, his dad's in prison, and, you know, when you're 14 years old and you have a crush on a senior, the last thing you want to do is walk up and say, you know, is it really true that your mom's addicted to drugs? It's not exactly polite conversation. So it took a number of months. But eventually he explained to me what had happened. So years earlier, when he was actually in junior high school, his mom was in a really bad car accident, and she was temporarily paralyzed, so she couldn't walk and then couldn't work. So she lost her job, which then led to them losing their home. When they lost their home, they had to move from suburban Indianapolis to public housing in the city. And she became very depressed and addicted to the painkiller Dilaudid that she'd been prescribed after the accident. And so as that kind of spiraled out of control, she began to use it very heavily and then sell it in order to meet her own habit. And that then escalated into her selling all kinds of other drugs. And so what happened to my friend Ryan was that he had essentially gone from cornfields to a crack house in about a 9-month period, and that coincided with his transition from junior high to high school. And so he ended up failing all of his classes and missing more than 30 days of school that first year. So, you know, I'm at the, you know, listening to this story, I'm trying to, with my 14-year-old brain at the time, understand, I don't get it. Like, how do you fail all your classes and never attend school and then a few years later have straight A's and are going to the Naval Academy?
What did happen to Ryan?
So it was just an incredible thing. There was a group of teachers who, you know, ultimately Ryan had to help himself, but they helped Ryan help himself, and they made it easier to make good decisions. And the way that they did that was they saw that, you know, this is a kid who sometimes didn't have food and or clean clothing or a place with heat to sleep. And so they just basically formed an extended family. They would give him rides to school. They would bring him breakfast. They would give him a place to do his laundry. They would take him shopping for clothes. They became his extended family when his family was in complete crisis. And, you know, he still had to decide to get up and go to school.
Sure.
But it's a lot easier when someone's picking you up and bringing you something to eat in the morning.
So by the time you met Ryan, as you said, he was a senior in high school?
Yes.
And did he go to the Naval Academy?
He did go to the Naval Academy.
And then you came along a few years later and graduated from the high school in Indiana.
Right. So eventually, it took a lot of work, but I convinced him to date me.
Okay.
And then
I thought that was part of the story.
Yeah, and he came out to the Naval Academy, and then I did the most irresponsible and also wonderful thing I've ever done, which is decided where to go to college based on a boy and followed him out here. And we later got married and have now been married for 15 years.
So that's the Ryan part of the story.
Yes.
So he went to the Naval Academy. And did you go to Hopkins as an undergrad?
I did.
Okay. So back to THREAD and the incentive mentoring program. You sort of set it up for us here. I understand what you're thinking about, right? So when you're in Baltimore, how does the idea develop to actually get a program started here? How did that happen?
So it's really interesting, and I think actually a huge part of our culture and how we approach things today is that what happened with Ryan in high school is kind of part one of our story. But part two is that when I came out as an undergraduate, it wasn't like I arrived in Baltimore and I was like, oh, let's start THREAD. Instead, I had a master checklist of all of the things that I thought if I did those things, so if I joined the right sorority, if I got the right undergraduate degree, if I had the correct internship, if I purchased a house, and basically if I did all these things, then I thought I would be happy as an adult. So during my undergraduate time, I was just really self-focused and didn't have a clue as to what was really happening in Baltimore. It wasn't until I decided to stay for graduate school, and I would drive in every morning to school down in the East Baltimore campus. And at the time, I was really struggling to kind of acclimate to graduate school. I didn't really have a lot of friends. And
what were you studying, by the way?
Biomedical engineering.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. So you weren't adjusting. What? You thought something was missing?
Well, that was the problem. So on paper, I had done everything that I had wanted to do. So I had gotten the degree. I had had the internship. I had joined the sorority. I had married the guy. I had bought the house. And so on paper, I should have been really happy, and I just wasn't. And I couldn't quite figure out why. And it was around that time I was just driving in one day and was stopped at the light at Caroline and Orleans. And for the first time, noticed that there was a high school there.
Dunbar High School.
Yeah. I mean, I'd driven the same way every single day, but never really noticed. And then I quickly realized that there was public housing across the street. And then for me, the thing that really changed everything was when I looked across the street and kind of saw the Hopkins buildings. I wasn't so much focused on the disparity between the two. What hit me was I felt so much more capable of bonding with students at Dunbar who I just assumed. So I'd never been in Dunbar. I just assumed there were kids that were like my husband that were really, really smart, but also really distracted with things outside of school. And as an introvert, I think I just felt more confident forming kind of a community and a family for myself there than with my own peers in graduate school at the time. So that's kind of how THREAD got started. It was really you know, the idea of what to do came from what Ryan had been through. But the thing that actually ignited it was the fact that I just felt really isolated and alone and wanted to connect and wasn't really sure how. And I think that's, in terms of how we do things today, it's a huge part of our culture.
I understand your story. I'm just curious, what happened to your interest in biomedical engineering? Did that go away?
Oh, not at all. So,
did you finish your degree?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, that's all. I just wondered about that. So an idea occurred to you that maybe there should be some connection between, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but some connection between what goes on at Hopkins and all those brilliant people who come here to go to school there and work here and those kids at Dunbar?
I wish I were that smart and thoughtful.
Well, tell us how it came to you.
No, so I just really, honestly, I knew nothing about the school system. I knew nothing about Baltimore at the time. If you had said 501c3, I would have said, huh? Like, I had absolutely no idea what that was.
Right.
I just walked into the school and asked, you know, to speak to the principal and really just wanted to find out who the students were that I thought were most like Ryan. So I was looking to work with students who academically were in the bottom 25% of their class and then facing kind of extraordinary challenges outside of school. It was only out of necessity that I started to kind of accidentally bring those two worlds together. So very quickly after we enrolled the first 15 kids, and I was standing there and we were having a brainstorming session with them about what the program should look like and what activities we should do, because I really had no idea what
these
I was doing.
These are the Dunbar kids, right?
Yes, okay. Yeah. So I, you know, I had no idea how to do any of this. So I asked them, I was like, what do you guys want to do? And they had all these amazing ideas and I thought they sounded fantastic, but then I quickly realized I couldn't do it by myself. So at the time I was actually in medical school, and the way I got up the courage to actually engage my classmates at Hopkins was for the kids at Dunbar. So I was sharing a cadaver with three other people, and those became our first three volunteers who came and joined me in the afternoons.
Your idea was find the kids who are most at risk, we'll say. Well, there's become sort of a cliche, but that's really what it is they're at risk at falling out. They've been underachieving. They come in as a freshman, probably be overwhelmed by high school. There's a good chance the system will lose them. You wanted to focus on them and connect them to people who could help them.
Yeah, I mean, initially I wanted to be connected to them myself because I thought they could help me. But it also became really clear that, that they were completely capable, just like Ryan was, of helping themselves. It was a matter of, like, helping them navigate how to do that.
How did you think they could help you? What were you looking for?
I was looking for friends. I was looking for an extended family. I was looking to feel like I mattered to other people. I was looking for a community that I didn't have.
What did Ryan say when you told him about your idea?
He thought it was insane. And then his second response was, how much will this cost?
What did the principal of Dunbar think of you and these connecting you to these 15 students?
He also thought it was insane. He joked with me. He said I wasn't the first or the last Hopkins student that had walked across the street, and he gave me a couple weeks. And we joke now because 11 years later, I said that couple weeks stretched really far.
You were thinking mentoring, tutoring, whatever it takes to help a kid get through high school?
Yeah, I was thinking more, you know, if I were the older sister of one of these, one of our students, like what would an older sister do, or what would an aunt do, or what would an uncle do, or a parent or a grandma or, you know, a neighbor down the street? Like, what are the things that a community would naturally do? And that went both ways. So, yeah, that could include helping a student find a job or tutoring them after school. But it could also include, you know, when I was sick a few years ago, it was the kids coming to visit me in the hospital and, you know, really giving me the support that I needed as a person. So it really spanned what a family would do for one another in both directions.
It's been 11 years now, And so, ladies and gentlemen, this is Sarah Heminger, co-founder and CEO of the nonprofit Thread, which started off as the Incentive Mentoring Program. It's now called Thread. And we're going to talk about what Sarah and the volunteers, the many volunteers over the years that have come to Thread, have achieved, and what the students have achieved during this hour of the show. You just hear it. You just have heard the beginning of the story. We'll have to take a break here, Sarah. We'll come back and talk some more. Sarah Heminger, again, our guest from Thread. I can give the phone number if you have a comment or question as we move along here, 410-662-8780. Otherwise, just sit back and enjoy the rest of this story. And in a little while, we'll be meeting one of the volunteers from Thread and one of the students who have benefited from it. And welcome back to Midday, telling the story of Thread, the nonprofit in Baltimore. Sarah Heminger is the CEO, the co-founder with Ryan, because you got your husband, Ryan, to help you get this thing started, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he came along with you, right?
So he ended up being the founding board chairman and doing a lot of the operations while I did programming.
Let's push the clock ahead a little bit so we can tell more of the story. You started getting volunteers, a lot of Hopkins people, right?
Yes.
Grad students, employees of Hopkins to help you. The idea was make it intensive, provide as many volunteers as a student might need to stay focused on graduating from high school. I'm just trying to summarize it here, but that's it.
Correct. And, you know, over time, we generally start with 8 volunteers with one student. But as the student matures, that number is reduced down to 1. So because students are with us for a decade, it's the rest of high school and 6 years after high school. By the time a student is Derek's age, he doesn't really need or want 8 people running after everything he's doing.
Derek Brown is in the studio with us, an alumnus of the program, along with Jordan Wagner, who is a volunteer. Derek, nice to have you on the show with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Derek Brown and Jordan, thank you for coming in, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll get to you guys in just a moment here. So, Sarah, I saw on the website of Thread where it says our best year ever, 2014. What made it the best year ever here, 11 years after you got it started? What made 2014 so special?
It was so special, mostly because I feel like things have come full circle. So, you know, our oldest group of students are now alumni, so they've gone through the full 10 years. And this past year, they've really just emerged as leaders in the Baltimore community. And they're older than I was when we started. They are, you know, launching into their careers. They're getting married. They're having children. And I had a daughter this year, and it's really, you know, it's just amazing because we're going to raise our children together. And so that, you know, just in many dimensions, it was a really special year to see, especially that first cohort just come into their own.
So out of all the cohorts that you've had come through the program, have any of them dropped out? What's your success rate, I guess? And success, I mean, students, boys and girls who stayed with the program as they became young adults.
So we've actually never lost a student. I think the thing that has been most key is that once students are in, they really can't get out. And they all try. At some point in time, running is part of the process. But
have they all graduated from high school?
Yeah, so they've all stayed. All of the students that are of age have now graduated from high school.
How many kids are we talking about then over a 10 or 11-year period now?
So 49, and, you know, to see them, it's just been unbelievable to see what, you know, I assumed it was possible given Ryan had done it, but to see it happen now 49 times, and as we've gotten more mature as an organization, we're enrolling larger and larger cohorts of students, so that number will just continue to increase.
And again, you look for that bottom 25% of achieving students entering as freshmen at 3 schools.
Correct.
Is that right? Dunbar. You started at Dunbar, but it's expanded now to two other high schools.
That's correct. So we started at Dunbar in 2004 and then expanded to the Academy for College and Career Exploration in 2010 and then this year to Douglas.
Derek Brown. How old are you, Derek?
26.
26. And you came into THRED when it was still called the Incentive Mentoring Program.
Yeah.
So that was... What was that? Was that 12, 11 years ago at the beginning?
Yeah.
Oh, you were there at the beginning if you're 26. So you're,
yeah.
Okay. And you went to Dunbar?
Yep.
Okay. Do you remember what you were like when you were a freshman at Dunbar and you met Sarah?
A lot smaller.
smaller. Okay. But, I mean, how were you doing in terms of school, your attitude, your home life? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So, Well, I went to Dunbar Middle School. I think I was pretty good in my academics in middle school when I graduated from the, eighth grade.
Eighth grade, yeah.
but going to Dunbar High School, I had a different, my priorities was a bit broken. I went to Dunbar thinking I would be a pro athlete. So I went to Dunbar wanting to play on a basketball team, and that had effect on my grades. So that's why my ninth grade was, you know, pretty bad.
So, Sarah, do you remember meeting Derek for the first time? He was identified as a student who could, do better if he got a little bit of help? How did you identify those students you helped at the beginning?
Well, so Derek was part of the first group of students that was identified just primarily on GPA. And it became very apparent very quickly, though, just how smart and capable Derek was, but also, I think, is it fair to say unfocused at the time and focused on other things? And I think, so a lot of it was just kind of forming a relationship and working together to kind of think about what he wanted his life's focus to be, where he wanted to be at 26, what he wanted his life to look like.
Did you maintain an interest in becoming a professional athlete while you stayed at Dunbar?
I stayed at Dunbar. I always still had the, even now, I still like basketball, but took my academics more seriously.
Those volunteers that you had that helped you and stayed with you, right, for those years, what did they do for you? Did someone help you with your homework?
Yes, certainly. Anytime I had, struggles at, math, homework, literature, whatever it was, I always had someone there that was just a call away that I could, you know, ask help, even meet up, you know, for lunch or whatever it may be to get help. But outside of academics, it was just someone that I could talk to for advice and just personally.
And Jordan Wagner is with us, who's now a volunteer, right, Jordan?
Yes.
Thanks again for being here. You're a graduate student at Hopkins?
I am.
Yeah, and how long have you been volunteering with THRED?
A year and a half now.
Yeah, what's this been like for you?
It's been great.
What's great about it, and what do you actually do for the students?
So I work with...
What's your specialty, I guess, as a volunteer?
So as Sarah mentioned, there's a group of eight people that work with students while they're in high school, and currently I'm the head of what we call families. So I have other volunteers that I work with and coordinate with so that we can make sure that we can take care of our student all the time. And
what does all the time mean? What do they need?
What do they need?
Yeah. Besides, I mean, I would assume tutoring, mentoring, but there's more to it than that, right? Sometimes they have trouble getting to school. There's issues at home. What's that been like for you?
Absolutely. We always make sure to get to tutoring, and those are things that I expected. But then there's a lot more to it. As Sarah mentioned, these kids have a lot of trouble outside of school, whether that is just transportation needs. And so I've driven my student all over Baltimore, either to a family member or to school sometimes, or different activities. And sometimes there was once where my student had to move, and so I assisted him because he didn't have access to a vehicle. So really, we're there to help them do everything to just live a life so that they can focus on school and succeed.
And how much time does this take out of your life?
That really goes up and down depending on the need.
Or the phone call.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Hmm. You know, several hours a week, and a lot of it is how much do you want to put into it, and you have that team there to rely on. So if you really cannot offer your services like that week, someone else a lot of times will step up and help you out.
Hey, Derek, back when this started in Saratoga, well, you're going to have these volunteers that are going to help you. It's people you don't know, right? They were strangers.
Yeah.
How did you react to that idea at the beginning?
Reacted pretty good because Sarah showed up with pizza. So, being in the ninth grade, we would get pizza and just help on homework. So it was
so it was really easy.
Yeah,
you were open to getting your focus switched over to academics and getting some help. But Sarah, how have you know some of the students that you've identified from year to year? How do they react to this? Do they want to be in the program by now, or were there some students who were put up their hands and I don't know if I want this?
Well, there's a wide range, but I think what we try to do is really think about it as a process of recruiting what we consider to be the top talent in the city. So again, even though our students are underperforming, a lot of times that's because they're distracted and they're performing in some other arena. So when we go and the way our process works is we identify students based on GPA and attendance, but then we go and interview every student who is meets the qualifications to assess kind of what is happening inside and outside of school. And part of that process is just really conveying to them in a number of ways how much we want them, that we really understand that they're incredibly valuable, that they have incredible potential, and that we believe that they absolutely can achieve whatever they want to, but that, you know, we're here to provide support. And when thinking about the process of student enrollment as really one of recruitment of talent, I think, or I'd like to hope that that comes through to the kids. And it doesn't mean that every kid wants to join.
Well, that's what I was getting at. When you do an interview, when you talk to them, you want to be convinced that they want the help, right?
No.
No.
No, no,
so
no,
you'll
no,
take
no.
the tough cases.
Intentionally so. So the only way to actually be disqualified during the interview process is if we uncover that you have a very strong support system outside of school. So that your disqualifying criteria is a strong,
I get you.
Because that's not really where we're of
so the kids
use.
That you identify, then they don't have a lot of support structure. They don't have a extensive network of support.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. And for whoever they have at home, a parent, what has the reaction been like over the years from parents to the THREAD program?
Again, it's really ranged. I've met some parents who said, "Where have you been? You could have come a couple years ago and that would have been fantastic." Other parents who were less enthusiastic. But I think the important thing is really letting parents know that, you know, we understand that they know better than we do about their kid and that we are really here just to support them and helping their student help themselves. And sometimes, you know, what's important is that we are sensitive and respectful. So, for example, one parent, soon after her son was enrolled, they had both obviously agreed to the enrollment. She decided she didn't want him enrolled any longer. But, you know, our policy is once enrolled, you're in. So how do you navigate that? So what we ended up doing was for about 3 months, leaving a bag of groceries on her porch every Friday with a note that had our number and just said, whenever you're ready to chat or if you ever need anything, call us. And right around the holidays that year, her son ran away from home and she couldn't find him. So we were on our normal weekly grocery drop-off. And she called one night in the middle of the night and said, "I can't find my son. Do you have any idea where he is?" And of course, we knew exactly where he was because, you know, we've become very familiar and become really part of the neighborhoods in Baltimore and part of the friend networks of our kids and their cousins. And, you know, anyone they're hanging out with are people that we want to know and hang out with as well. You know, and so we went over, picked her up, and about 5 in the morning located her son. And I can tell you there was never a discussion after that of whether or not he was in the in Thread. Yeah.
But I'm so glad you told that story, because you can't let the kids go, because that's the whole point, isn't it? These are tough cases, right? They do have a lot of distractions. They do have a lot of ways to fall off and for us to lose them. All kinds of ways.
I like to think of it as they have a lot of other people recruiting them.
To do other things.
Yeah.
Other than graduate from high school.
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we have to make a really strong case, and we have to be as aggressive as the other people who are recruiting them.
Derek Brown, did your grades start to go up almost right away, or when did you see an improvement? When did you start feeling like, hey, this is okay, getting better grades and being a good student is an okay thing?
It was 10 years ago. Wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I believe instantly, because even starting at ninth grade, Sarah and other volunteers, you know, really stressed the importance of academics and started having us prepare for college that young, and something that I really wasn't, you know, was thinking about just graduating from the eighth grade.
But you were thinking about playing basketball someday.
Yeah.
So maybe you might have been thinking, well, you got to stop at college and play some college ball.
Exactly. Yeah. So graduating from the eighth grade, I always knew college could be that road to, you know, playing basketball. But it was always through that perspective.
It was always about basketball.
Yeah. So I gained that new perspective from Sarah and Thread by knowing that academics could be that road, and even like learning things of how to do a college application, or that you had to take the SAT to go to college. Lot of things that, you know, before then I just didn't think about.
Did you get some help in prep for the SAT? From your group of volunteers?
Yeah.
And how did you do? How did you finish in high school? Did you do pretty well?
Yeah, I did. I believe I did pretty well. I got accepted to, I think, about eight to ten colleges, maybe.
And did you go to college?
Yes, I went to Frostburg State University.
Did you finish there?
Yes.
So you have a bachelor's degree from Frostburg?
Yep, bachelor's in philosophy.
Excellent. So what's your plan? Where are you in life at the age of 26 now?
Right now, I am an AmeriCorps member doing my service year with Reading Partners. I'm a site coordinator, and this is a program that's, you know, aimed to getting young students who are a half to 2.5 years below grade level to become proficient readers.
Where are you doing that?
In Baltimore City.
A particular school or multiple schools?
Furman L. Templeton.
Oh, okay. By the way, the three schools that Thread is involved with, Dunbar, Douglas, and the third school is the one in Hamden?
Yes, ACE in Hamden.
ACE, which stands for?
The Academy for College and Career Exploration.
Right. And before I take the next break here, I want to take a phone call so you can all listen in. Welcome to our show, John. John wanted to make a comment about Thread. Thanks for calling our show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I love your show. I have a number of friends. I'm a grad student at Hopkins, and I have a number of friends who work with Thread. And they always sort of tell me, I mean, when they first started telling me about it, I sort of thought, oh, okay, you're going to do some kind of tutoring or something. But then, like, they would come over to my house to watch football, and they would, you know, bring the student they were working with, you know, or they would go pick him up or pick him up from his mom's house, give him a ride to his dad's house or whatever and stuff like that. And I just, the more I heard about it, the more I've just been blown away at how different it is than any other kind of like mentoring program I've ever heard of. And I just wanted to say that I'm so excited that it's happening, and I think it's really cool.
John, thank you very much for that call. How many volunteers have you involved over these, 11 years, Sarah?
So over the last few years, it's been thousands of volunteers.
Thousands.
But currently we have a little over 800 that are actively volunteering with.
Literally thousands. A few thousand.
Yeah.
And how many would you say, percentage-wise, are associated with Hopkins in some way?
About 90%.
About 90% of them.
Yeah, Hopkins has been just an incredible partner for the last decade in partnering with us to work with the entire student body, so not just in the School of Medicine, but nursing, public health, the Homewood campus. It's really been an amazing partnership.
Some statistics we got from Thread, 100% of the students who have gone through this program have stayed in the program all the way through, which is 10 years, right? They commit to 10 years. 100% have graduated from high school. 96% of it have been accepted to colleges. 80% of the first cohort from 2004, 80% has received a 2 or 4 year college degree. Sarah Heminger is the CEO of Thread. We're hearing the Thread story in this hour. Also joined by Derek Brown, an alumnus of the program, and Jordan Wagner, who's a current volunteer and from a grad student at Hopkins. Grad student in what? Not biomedical engineering. What's yours?
Physiology.
Physiology. All right. Thanks for being here. We'll take a short break. If anyone has comments or questions for Sarah or our guests, again, our phone number 410-662-8780. More information about Thread is on our website and the Dan Roderick's Facebook page.
Midday is made possible by WYPR members and by Cecil County Office of Economic Development, Tourism, and Agriculture. Dove Valley Winery hosts Paint and Wet Your Palette Van Gogh Series this Sunday, January 25th. No art experience needed. More information at ccecil.org, Maryland, Land of Culture. And support comes from Olivier, an olive oil and vinegar tasting store offering an assortment of olive oils, specialty oils.
Here's an email from one of our listeners, Pete. Congratulations to Sarah. He says, right off, I was struck by the one thing you exhibit that is essential to being of use to another human being. You have to feel in your bones that you can gain at least as much from knowing the other person as they will ever get from you. Many so-called experts don't meet this threshold. I spent 8 years as a community organizer and 17 years as a social worker and program director in foster care. I'm retired now and can get pretty discouraged thinking of all the battles lost and the very few won. Thank you for the breath of fresh air and for the reminder that it can be done right. Best of luck to all of you. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. Pretty nice sentiment there from Pete. Thank you very much. Let's take another call. Nick Maroney called in. Nick Maroney is the Independent Juvenile Justice Monitor for the state of Maryland. Is that right, Nick?
We're called the Juvenile Justice Monitoring Unit. We're a small team housed at the Attorney General's office to guard against abuse in juvenile services facilities, operated and licensed facilities, and also, which is more relevant to Sarah, to ensure that kids receive proper services. And I think what I'm familiar with Sarah and her organization for the past few years, and I think there's a huge lesson to be learned, and it's a tremendously important organization given how successful they've been. Extremely well-planned, extremely data-driven, fabulous success with the kids. Kids whose lives are in free fall, typically, and you can imagine, too, that a lot of the kids that Sarah has helped or that has helped help themselves have had brushes with the law. We tend to, in my sort of area, put kids in that situation into institutions which have not been entirely successful in dealing with those children's problems, because it takes the kids away from their community environment, and then the kids come back to their community environment. What Sarah's organization has done is to provide a family which takes care of some of the obstacles the kids need to overcome, and therefore the kids become successful in that way. So rather than, you know, throwing away money on building facilities and basically destroying young lives, Sarah's organization is rescuing young lives, and I think there's a real model there that could be studied and should be studied, and it's very important in terms of the national conversation about what to do in juvenile justice.
Nick, thank you very much. Appreciate that call and those comments. Sarah, do you want to say anything about that?
We love you, Nick.
Okay. All right. Well, this is significant. Some statistics we got during the 2011-2012 school year, 41% of Baltimore's high school students were chronically absent. I mentioned that one earlier. Dropouts, high school dropouts are estimated to earn $260,000 less than graduates over the course of their lives. That's something we picked up from the Alliance for Excellent Education. A male dropout is over three times more likely than a graduate to have committed a crime that has led to his incarceration. That's from the same study. And that dropout rate affects not only the student, but the entire Baltimore community as well, as we know here. What is the training that a volunteer gets, or the orientation for a THREAD volunteer? What do you say to people who want to volunteer for your program when they come into it?
Well, I think the way that we kind of explain things up front, but then what you go through once you're part of the family are related but slightly different. So, you know, when we're engaging potential volunteers, I think the opportunity is to have an impact on someone else's life and an impact on your own. But it's very, very difficult. It's like explaining to a kid that it's 10 years. It's very difficult to internalize what that means until you start. And even in the initial training, there's initial training that includes things like how to use our technology system to safety protocols in an initial upfront two-hour training. But really the training happens and the transformation happens as you go along the way. So as Jordan mentioned, each of the THREAD families has what's called a head of family. And so every month on the first Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of each month, hundreds of volunteers gather at each of the three high school sites and have a monthly meeting where that THREAD family does the planning for the upcoming month, and that's led by the head of family. So there's ongoing training that happens in that meeting and coordination. And then, you know, if it's your first time to drive to pick a student up for school from Cherry Hill or Pohomes in West Baltimore, if you're not from Baltimore and you don't know your way around, that could be a bit intimidating. So you go with another more experienced volunteer. And again, that's part of the ongoing training. So you can think of it as when you start in a THREAD family, you're both forming a relationship with a student, but you're shadowing someone else on how to go about that. And then that more experienced volunteer shadows you, and then you do things on your own.
Have you had volunteers who say, well, this is too tough, I'm not relating to this student, they're not getting it, we're just not connecting?
Absolutely. I mean, my favorite one of this was just a very personal story. So there was, when I was in graduate school, one of my lab mates, who I was very close friends with, decided he wanted to join. And there was a student who I was similarly extremely close with. I feel like we were cut from the same cloth. And so I thought, oh, well, I love both of them and we all get along, so they should get along with one another. And one day they were tutoring over at Hopkins, and I walked in the building just to see how things were going. And the volunteer was recently had moved here from Iran. And so I walk in and I hear someone yelling in Persian. And that was my first sign that something was really wrong. And then I could hear someone else yelling back very loudly in not so polite terms. And anyway, I start thinking to myself, oh my gosh, we're all going to get thrown out of here. But, you know, they were yelling at one another and the volunteer was saying, you know, this kid's so disrespectful. He doesn't really, you know, care. He doesn't want to do anything. I'm never going to work with him again. And the kid's like, this volunteer is stupid. He doesn't understand how to tutor in algebra. And I'm kind of laughing a little on the inside because the volunteer, you know, is doing a PhD in mathematics, right, essentially. And I'm like, right, he definitely knows algebra.
Right.
But they just weren't communicating. And so, you know, they both wanted, the volunteer wanted a different student. The student didn't want to work with the volunteer. Our way of handling that was to say, it's family. It's not like you can't give family back. So why would you do that in this instance? And so we just worked with them and they became very, very close over the years. And
so you don't give up on volunteers either.
No. And that's really key, right? Because you have to model the culture all the way through.
Right.
What's interesting is what they ended up really bonding on was that the student, he had previously been selling drugs, and as he had stopped doing that, started going to school and progressing academically, he just felt like no matter what he did, people would just always assume he was a gangbanger. And the volunteer felt like no matter what he did, people just assumed he was a terrorist. And so what they actually came to understand about one another was just this feeling of being
isolated?
On the outside, or isolated
in some way?
Yeah. And so that's actually became the strength of their relationship. And, you know, now the volunteers actually back in Iran, but they have Sunday night, you know, chats still years later because they've become so close.
Are you, Derek, in touch with some of the volunteers that worked with you over those years?
So I was in it when it first began.
Yeah.
So Sarah and Ryan is
she's sitting right here next
to
you.
Yeah.
So, hey, Jordan, yes. Jordan, before I let you go, Jordan Wagner is a volunteer now. Where did you grow up, by the way, Jordan? Where are you from?
Just outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay. What's been the biggest eye-opener for you being a volunteer with THREAD in terms of the way kids live, what happens to them in their lives? I'm just curious, what would you say is the most striking thing? You know, I just had no idea what this was like. You know, it was something that was a real eye-opener for you about the way kids grow up in Baltimore.
Yeah. Honestly, it's probably one of my favorite things about THREAD is the fact that I get to have this relationship with this young man who is so incredible, and I get to see parts of his life that I never would have without THREAD. And one story that I love to tell, actually, that's right up that same vein is he unfortunately wasn't able to go with his girlfriend to prom last year, but since she was going with someone else, he wanted to go and see her off. And so I, you know, drove across the city to go and get him and take him to his girlfriend's house to see her before she went to prom. And I pull up, and there's a crowd in the street. And I counted. It was over 30 people. And I was confused at first. And so he went over, went into the house, and I realized that, and I asked him to confirm that everyone was there to see her go to prom.
Right.
It was like this, and the sense of community that I got from that one moment was just incredible.
It's a big deal. She's all dressed up.
Yeah.
She's it's just sort of like coming out like a debutante or something.
Yeah, I don't even know, you know, if that many people even cared if I went to prom,
right,
let alone
right.
came to see me. And
right.
and that same sense of community is just on when I go and pick him up, everyone on his block, he knows everyone, everyone knows him. It's just.
And yet he needs you. He needs others because he doesn't have adequate support.
Well, I think what we really provide is something stable. There's a lot of people in his life that are there for him, and you know, they may be there at one time and may not, and they have varying stability. But the one thing that I see THREAD bringing to these kids in high school more than anything is someone that is always there for them. And like Sarah says, we never let go.
A phone call away.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming here and talking about this, Jordan. Jordan Wagner, graduate student at Hopkins, who's a volunteer in THREAD, the nonprofit that we've been talking about. And Derek Brown, an alumnus of the program, now an AmeriCorps volunteer, so doing your year of service here in Baltimore City.
Yes.
That's great. What are your plans after that? Do you have any yet? You figured it out yet?
I'm pursuing going into the professional realm with Reading Partners.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so you like working with kids.
Yes.
How old are the kids you work with, by the way?
Oh, wow. they are between like 5 to 11.
Kids.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Elementary school.
School.
So you like
yeah.
this?
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Good for
it's
you, Derek.
Refreshing.
Thanks for coming in and talking about this.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Thank you for your story. And Sarah Heminger, it's nice to finally get to meet you and hear this story. I'm glad you brought it to our microphones. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. The plan is to expand. Get more kids to graduate from high school in Baltimore City?
It's to go all in Baltimore City.
What do you mean?
Whatever it takes.
All in.
It's to basically grow within Baltimore and put all of the resources we have into serving as
your
many students here as possible.
Grow from year to year. Is that the idea?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Good luck with that, Sarah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Sarah Heminger, CEO and co-founder with her husband of THREAD. And you can find out more about it on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Midday all this week. I hope you have a nice weekend, and we'll see you back here on Monday. Please come back.
Midday senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producer is Michael Himowitz. Our interns are Carrie DeSantis, David Richmond, and Marjorie Goodman. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming is available at WYPR.org. Dan Rodrick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.